Chapter 19. There duly came the charm of calling at the college door for her, her emergence in a nun-like simplicity of costume that was rather enforced than desired, the traipsing along to the station, the porter's relief, the screaming of the trains, everything formed the basis of a beautiful crystallization. Nobody stared at Sue, because she was so plainly dressed, which comforted Jude in the thought that only himself knew the charms those habiliments subdued. A matter of £10 spent in a drapery shop, which had no connection with her real life or her real self, would have set all Melchester staring. The guard of the train thought they were lovers, and put them into a compartment all by themselves. "That's a good intention wasted," said she. Jude did not respond. He thought the remark unnecessarily cruel, and partly untrue. They reached the park and castle, and wandered through the picture galleries, Jude stopping by preference in front of the devotional pictures by Del Sarto, Guido Reni, Spagnoletto, Sassoferrato, Carlo Dolci, and others. Sue paused patiently beside him, and stole critical looks into his face as, regarding the virgins, holy families, and saints, it grew reverent and abstracted. When as he had thoroughly estimated him at this, she would move on and wait for him before Aelia Reynolds. It was evident that her cousin deeply interested her, as one might be interested in a man puzzling out his way along a labyrinth from which one had oneself escaped. When they came out, a long time still remained to them, and Jude proposed that, as soon as they had had something to eat, they should walk across the high country to the north of their present position, and intercept the train of another railway leading back to Melchester, at a station about 7 miles off. Sue, who was inclined for any adventure that would intensify the sense of her day's freedom, readily agreed. And away they went, leaving the adjoining station behind them. It was indeed open country, wide and high. They talked and bounded on, Jude cutting from a little covert a long walking stick for Sue as tall as herself, with a great crook, which made her look like a shepherdess. About halfway on their journey they crossed a main road running due east, and west the old road from London to Land's End. They paused, and looked up and down it for a moment, and remarked upon the desolation which had come over this once lively thoroughfare, while the wind dipped to earth, and scooped straws and hay stems from the ground. They crossed the road and passed on, but during the next half mile Sue seemed to grow tired, and Jude began to be distressed for her. They had walked a good distance altogether, and if they could not reach the other station it would be rather awkward. For a long time there was no cottage visible on the wide expanse of down and turnip land, but presently they came to a sheepfold, and next to the shepherd, pitching hurdles. He told them that the only house near was his mother's and his, pointing to a little dip ahead from which a faint blue smoke arose, and recommended them to go on and rest there. This they did, and entered the house, admitted by an old woman without a single tooth, to whom they were as civil as strangers can be when their only chance of rest and shelter lies in the favor of the householder. "A nice little cottage," said Jude. "Oh, I don't know about the niceness. I shall have to thatch it soon, and where the thatch is to come from I can't tell, for straw do get that dear, that will soon be cheaper to cover your house wide chainy plates than thatch." They sat resting, and the shepherd came in. "Auntie, mind I," he said with a deprecating wave of the hand, "I'd hear, as long as he will. But mid you be thinking o' getting back to Melchester tonight by train? Because you'll never do it in this world, since you don't know the lie of the country. I don't mind going with ye some o' the ways, but even then the train mid be gone." They started up. "You can bide here, you know, over the night, can't em, mother? The place is welcome to ye. 'Tis hard lying, rather, but folk may do worse." He turned to Jude and asked privately, "Are you a married couple?"
"HSH no," said Jude.
"Oh, I meant nothing baddie, not I. Well then, she can go into mother's room, and you and I can lie in the outer chimmer after they've gone through. I can call ye soon enough, to catch the first train back. You've lost this one now. On consideration, they decided to close with this offer, and drew up and shared with the shepherd and his mother the boiled bacon and greens for supper. I rather like this, said Sue, while their entertainers were clearing away the dishes. Outside all laws except gravitation and germination. You only think you like it. You don't. You are quite a product of civilization, said Jude, a recollection of her engagement reviving his soreness a little. Indeed I am not, Jude. I like reading and all that, but I crave to get back to the life of my infancy and its freedom. Do you remember it so well? You seem to me to have nothing unconventional at all about you. Oh, haven't I? You don't know what's inside me. What? The Ishmaelite. An urban miss is what you are. She looked severe disagreement, and turned away. The shepherd aroused them the next morning, as he had said. It was bright and clear, and the 4 miles to the train were accomplished pleasantly. When they had reached Melchester, and walked to the close, and the gables of the old building in which she was again to be immured rose before Sue's eyes, she looked a little scared. Expect I shall catch it, she murmured. They rang the great bell and waited. Oh, I bought something for you, which I had nearly forgotten, she said quickly, searching her pocket. Tea is a new little photograph of me. Would you like it? Would I? He took it gladly, and the porter came. There seemed to be an ominous glance on his face when he opened the gate. She passed in, looking back at Jude, and waving her hand. 3. The 70 young women, of ages varying in the main from 19 to 1 and 20, though several were older, who at this date filled the species of nunnery known as the training school at Melchester, formed a very mixed community, which included the daughters of mechanics, curates, surgeons, shopkeepers, farmers, dairymen, soldiers, sailors, and villagers. They sat in the large schoolroom of the establishment on the evening previously described, and word was passed round that Sue Brighthead had not come in at closing time. She went out with her young man, said a second-year student who knew about young men. And Miss Tracy saw her at the station with him. She'll have it hot when she does come. She said he was her cousin, observed a youthful new girl. That excuse has been made a little too often in this school to be effectual in saving our souls, said the head girl of the year, dryly. The fact was that, only 12 months before, there had occurred a lamentable seduction of one of the pupils who had made the same statement in order to gain meetings with her lover. The affair had created a scandal, and the management had consequently been rough on cousins ever since. At 9 o'clock the names were called, Sue's being pronounced 3 times sonorously by Miss Tracy without eliciting an answer. At 9:15 the 70 stood up to sing the evening hymn, and then knelt down to prayers. After prayers they went in to supper, and every girl's thought was, where is Sue Brighthead? Some of the students, who had seen Jude from the window, felt that they would not mind risking her punishment for the pleasure of being kissed by such a kindly-faced young man. Hardly one among them believed in the cousinship. Half an hour later they all lay in their cubicles, their tender feminine faces upturned to the flaring gas jets which at intervals stretched down the long dormitories, every face bearing the legend, he weaker upon it, as the penalty of the sex wherein they were molded, which by no possible exertion of their willing hearts and abilities could be made strong while the inexorable laws of nature remain what they are. They formed a pretty suggestive pathetic sight, of whose pathos and beauty they were themselves unconscious, and would not discover till, amid the storms and strains of after years, with their injustice, loneliness, childbearing, and bereavement, their minds would revert to this experience, as to something which had been allowed to slip past them insufficiently regarded. One of the mistresses came in to turn out the lights, and before doing so gave a final glance at Sue's cot, which remained empty, and at her little dressing table at the foot, which, like all the rest, was ornamented with various girlish trifles, framed photographs being not the least conspicuous among them. Sue's table at a moderate show, two men in their filigree and velvet frames standing together beside her looking glass. Who are these men, did she ever say? Asked the mistress. Strictly speaking, relations portraits only are allowed on these tables, you know. One the middle-aged man, said a student in the next bed, as the schoolmaster she served under Mr. Phillotson. And the other this undergraduate in cap and gown, who is he? He is a friend, or was, as he has never told his name. Was it either of these two who came for her? No. You are sure 'twas not the undergraduate? Quite. He was a young man with a black beard. The lights were promptly extinguished, and till they fell asleep the girls indulged in conjectures about Sue, and wondered what games as he had carried on in London, and at Christminster, before she came here, some of the more restless ones getting out of bed and looking from the mullioned windows at the vast west front of the cathedral opposite, and the spire rising behind it. When they awoke the next morning they glanced into Sue's nook, to find it still without a tenant. After the yearly lessons by gaslight, in half-toilet, and when they had come up to dress for breakfast, the bell of the entrance gate was heard to ring loudly. The mistress of the dormitory went away, and presently came back to say that the principal's orders were that nobody was to speak to Brighthead without permission. When, accordingly, Sue came into the dormitory to hastily tidy herself, looking flushed and tired, she went to her cubicle in silence, none of them coming out to greet her, or to make inquiry. When they had gone downstairs they found that she did not follow them into the dining hall to breakfast, and they then learned that as he had been severely reprimanded, and ordered to a solitary room for a week, there to be confined, and take her meals, and do all her reading. At this the 70 murmured, the sentence being, they thought, too severe. A round robin was prepared and sent in to the principal, asking for a remission of Sue's punishment. No notice was taken. Towards evening, when the geography mistress began dictating her subject, the girls in the class sat with folded arms. You mean that you are not going to work? Said the mistress at last. I may as well tell you that it has been ascertained that the young man Brighthead stayed out with was not her cousin, for the very good reason that as he has no such relative. We have written to Christminster to ascertain. We are willing to take her word, said the head girl. This young man was discharged from his work at Christminster for drunkenness and blasphemy in public houses, and he has come here to live, entirely to be near her. However, they remained stolid and motionless, and the mistress left the room, to inquire from her superiors, what was to be done. Presently, towards dusk, the pupils, as they sat, heard exclamations from the first year's girls in an adjoining classroom, and one rushed in to say that Sue Brighthead had got out of the back window of the room in which as he had been confined, escaped in the dark across the lawn, and disappeared. How as he had managed to get out of the garden nobody could tell, as it was bounded by the river at the bottom, and the side door was locked. They went and looked at the empty room, the casement between the middle mullions of which stood open. The lawn was again searched with a lantern, every bush and shrub being examined, but she was nowhere hidden. Then the porter of the front gate was interrogated, and on reflection he said that he remembered hearing a sort of splashing in the stream at the back, but he had taken no notice, thinking some ducks had come down the river from above. She must have walked through the river, said a mistress. Or drowned herself, said the porter. The mind of the matron was horrified not so much at the possible death of Sue, as at the possible half-column detailing that event in all the newspapers, which, added to the scandal of the year before, would give the college an unenviable notoriety for many months to come. More lanterns were procured, and the river examined. And then, at last, on the opposite shore, which was open to the fields, some little boot tracks were discerned in the mud, which left no doubt that the too excitable girl had waded through a depth of water reaching nearly to her shoulders, for this was the chief river of the county, and was mentioned in all the geography books with respect. As Sue had not brought disgrace upon the school by drowning herself, the matron began to speak superciliously of her, and to express gladness that she was gone. On the selfsame evening, Jude sat in his lodgings by the close gate. Often at this hour after dusk he would enter the silent close, and stand opposite the house that contained Sue, and watch the shadows of the girl's heads passing to and fro upon the blinds, and wish he had nothing else to do but to sit reading and learning all day, what many of the thoughtless inmates despised. But tonight, having finished tea, and brushed himself up. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.